Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast, Hot Takes Edition.
Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast. This is the Hot Takes Edition, immediately following the game recorded without the benefit of having gone back and rewatched anything or done any additional study, but just giving a little bit of those early thoughts, those hot takes in response to what we just witnessed. And wow, what a debacle. I mean, this has to be the most disappointing debut that you really could have imagined for a head coach that built up an incredible amount of goodwill during the offseason, did everything right. I mean, it invited legends back, got basically talked all about how he wanted to get back to what it is, to Florida State tradition, really emphasized, rebuilding Florida State culture and injecting Florida State DNA back into this program. And, everything in the offseason was exactly as you'd expect. And then this team walked in into a blackout crowd, everybody so excited and ready to embrace any coach who really truly wanted to be, that this is his dream job, basically not the non-Jimbo Fisher, excited about all the changes that are being brought. And then just completely laid an egg on national television, looked as helpless and anemic as you're going to see. At one point, ESPN flashed up the graphic that 28 of 38 plays had gone for no gain or for a loss. That's hard to swallow. And this from an offense that all off season and, in the spring and everything else, what you heard about was lethal simplicity, and simplifying things and putting your playmakers in position to make plays. And, that all sounds really good. And by and large, I'm on board with it. I mean, this is something that I'm dealing with as a coach at the high school level too, is that, sometimes, when you got a guy that's 6'4" and is lined up across from a guy that's 5'10", don't overcomplicate things. Throw it up, let him go get it until they can stop it, until they show they can stop it. Let your guy be a playmaker. Don't overcomplicate things. So I'm largely on board with that sort of thing. But what we saw tonight is that, sometimes simplifying, sometimes, playing the young guys and all that doesn't, those aren't all just answers. Those are not ready-made answers that just mean you're going to win. No educated fan really, or analyst really believed that those were the sorts of things that just would automatically translate into wins. But I don't think anybody expected what we saw tonight and what we, I don't, yeah. I'm a bit at a loss because, it is not what I had seen when I saw them in practice. It's not the level of performance that I expected by any means. And I've been honest about where I felt like this offensive approach, where Taggart's offensive approach has been limited in the past. If you go back to some of my podcasts from the spring and from, early on, right after he was hired, one of the things that I called into question is that, he's going to need to incorporate more of a downfield intermediate passing game and package that with the running game and the RPO game that he's got on the perimeter in order to win consistently against good defenses in the ACC, because those defenses are going to be able to put the clamps on a little bit more on that running game. You're not going to be able to win in the box all the time. And, they're going to have some guys that can single cover on the outside and tackle in space. So you're going to have to do what Clemson has done and mix in some consistent intermediate passing concepts and some pro style concepts in order to sustain that kind of success against your top defenses. And I didn't see a whole lot tonight to indicate that they've not done any of that. What I did see tonight is that they didn't do any of it all that well. There were some intermediate concepts that they had success with early in the game, but then later on it appeared to me that Francois was never really, he stopped being comfortable sometime after the Gavin drop, which was a bad drop. I mean, it was a dime by Francois, and Gavin dropping that in the end zone was a huge momentum shift. But you know, he'd hit him on a couple earlier throws where he looked comfortable. And there were a number of times after about the mid second quarter where Francois, and this was not a pressure issue, because he had time, you know, he's got his feet set. He should be throwing in rhythm. And I was watching the all 22 and there was a guy open, oftentimes, and a guy that should have been in his view in a part of his read progression, and he just didn't pull the trigger. And I'm not exactly sure why in a few cases. So it's not that they don't have any of those concepts in there, but they didn't do it all that well. And then in terms of the flow of the game, they wound up, because of the commitment to run so much on first down, and to try to establish that running game, they wound up, in third and long situations a lot, and against a team like Virginia Tech, and against a coordinator like Bud Foster, you need to throw the ball on first down enough to keep them honest, and you need to be able to challenge them in that intermediate area and cause some problems for them. And that was one of my first sort of takeaways there, is that Florida State wasn't able to do that consistently enough, where basically Foster was able to load the box match up one-on-one on the outside. And if you're going to do that, then against this kind of spread team, the reason that you put those splits out there is to force them to either put guys in the box, at which point you start to win those one-on-one matchups on the outside, or they start to have to match up more with what you're doing on the outside so that then you can start running it on the inside. But they weren't able to do either one in this game. Virginia Tech won those one-on-ones in the open field, with the exception of Akers' long run. They weren't able to get them out of the box. And as a result, Virginia Tech was always plus one in the box, in the running game. I've tried to explain to people in the past that Taggart is not a guy who's going to run his quarterback a bunch. There've been, some others who've insisted that Taggart is a run your quarterback a bunch guy. But there weren't a whole lot of plays called for Francois to keep today. There were a few read plays, but by and large, those were situations where you want the ball to be handed off, and Francois did. They used Francois, the action to keep a guy occupied at different times, which is more or less what I expected to see. But Virginia Tech was able to maintain a plus one in the box. They also, you got to give Foster and his staff credit. There were a number of times where it appeared to me that based on, the coaches, telecast also, a couple of the coaches in there pointed out a few places where they had seen something similar. It seemed to me that there were times where based on, formation and on motion, Virginia Tech had some auto checks built in to get a guy pressuring based, knowing that they're okay, when they do this formation and they motion the back in here, that's going to be inside zone. So we're just going to bring the safety. And then you got an untouched safety making a tackle for a loss. And you might blame the offensive line there, but then you look and the offensive line is mostly on their blocks, but it's the second level guy that you don't have anybody accounted for that's making the tackle. And that's Bud Foster willing to be aggressive, willing to have some complexity in his scheme there to give his guy a go when he recognizes that they do this, here's how we're going to go with it. And he's willing to take that shot. It's sort of like throwing deep on the offensive side, because if you catch him in it, then you can beat him behind that. And Florida State just wasn't able to do that. And they didn't have counters to what Foster brought to the table for the most part. And that's something that's going to have to continue to be improved. And I thought Hugh Freeze on the telecast was right when he pointed out that, this offense, I don't remember. I don't think it was Freeze that called it primitive. But, I think it was Gene Chizik that said it was primitive, the offense in terms of their lineups and all that. They said on both sides of the ball, they said, you can tell that this is a team that's being coached by first-year staff that hasn't been together for a bunch, and they haven't had these players for very long because, you know, the line, the formations and the motions and all that are pretty primitive. And they said there's just not – there are certain wrinkles that you work in once you've had the system in place for a while where players understand what's going on, and you can start to add a little bit more complexity to that to have those counters against the defense. And, you know, that's where – also, I think it was Todd Grammer or Jim Moore Jr. that said this was a situation where you had a lot of complexity on defense and you had a very simple approach on offense, and the offense just didn't have answers for what the defense was throwing at them, didn't have built-in stuff. I don't know that that's entirely true. I do think that there were some answers that were built in. And again, I don't know this for sure. I mean, I'd have to talk with someone on the staff to know for sure. But I do think that there were a few cases where they had some RPO calls in terms of, you know, backside screens and that sort of thing, because you could see it with the receivers doing it. And based on my box count, Francois should have taken the RPO. He should have thrown it out to the receiver, and instead they ran the football, and it was the wrong. Basically, Francois in the parlance of the old staff had him in the wrong play. It's the right play, but he made the wrong decision there. Now, it's possible. Sometimes as a staff, you call the play that's an RPO, but you tell the quarterback, you give him a give call, and he's supposed to give no matter what. So it's possible that some of those were in that case, or, you know, that was what had happened there. And if that's the case, that's actually more concerning, because there were a number of situations where you had some guys playing off on the edge, and you had enough of a numbers advantage that really the right thing to do is to just pitch it out to the bubble or to, you know, the smoke screen, the now screen, that sort of thing, right away to get some space on the edge and create some one-on-ones with your playmakers. And they didn't do that enough. And that's something, again, on first down, when they were running a lot of that, that zone design cutback where they're folding down, Virginia Tech figured out the rhythm of the offense there, and they kept calling flow pressure to that side, and so they always had the plus one right where the back is cutting back. And, you know, that's pretty frustrating to watch when you keep running your head into that wall, and ideally if they're going to respond with that flow pressure, you kick that out to the perimeter and make them tackle you, and you're ideally going to get a better situation there. But, you know, in terms of other things, I mean, a number of fans on the on social media are complaining about the lack of adjustments on the offensive side of the ball. But, you know, I've already talked about that on this podcast. This is not going to be a staff that is going to have, that's going to be known for their adjustments in game. I mean, that's something that Jimbo Fisher was one of the best in at any level of football on. And it's partly due to the complexity that's built into his offense, that, you know, he's got answers sort of built in for just about everything, but it also puts a higher load on the players to be able to handle all that. So, you know, there's a cost and a benefit to each side of it. But what you can't do is you can't adjust to stuff that you haven't repped and that you don't have installed. And really Taggart's offense in the past has been one that has generally started well. They've usually done a really good job of scouting and game planning for their opponent. And so, you know, adjustment has been less the emphasis. But I do think that this is something that is going to have to be a little bit more, especially in the first year. I mean, second year, you'll start to see a little bit more adjustment there. But in that first year, you're not going to see as much adjustment. You know, you're going to basically, if they can stop what you brought to the table, that's going to be that. You're going to keep doing it. And hopefully, you know, you get some guys, you're creating some space, and hopefully your guys end up winning in space at some point. But that's the design of this offense, is it's based on giving your superior talent one-on-one matchups to where they can hopefully win those. And so you don't overcomplicate that. You try to create those matchups, and if they're better than you on those in those situations, then it's going to look predictable. But at some point you just tip your cap and you say, well, you know, you guys are better than us. We're not trying to trick you. We're just trying to, you know, give our guys a chance to win. And so that is a little bit of what you're going to see there. Now, again, there are adjustments built in, on these, and there were a number of those that were missed, I think, during the course of the game. I mean, this game was really close to being a complete blowout. I mean, Virginia Tech should have put this game away earlier, But the game also was really close to being a much closer game or a Florida State win. I mean, Gavin catches that in the end zone. That's seven rather than three. Yeah, and then, or rather than a missed field goal, I'm sorry. So that's seven. And then, you know, Nooney Murray scored on the one that was never reviewed. That's seven rather than three. So that's 14 right there instead of ending up with three. And then, you know, you had a couple other situations where guys just missed assignments. You know, the little crack screen to Trey McKitty down in the goal line area from around the, 8 or 10 yard line. That looked bad because he got tackled for a loss in a situation where they were in man coverage and, you know, the guy responsible for him just ran out there and made the tackle in space. It looked bad. But if the wide receiver, if the number three wide receiver, so the inside slot, if the inside slot correctly diagnoses the coverage that it's man coverage and takes off inside and cracks the guy responsible for McKitty, that's probably a 5 or 6 yard gain or even scores. You saw the same play on the next drive for Virginia Tech that went for about 9 yards or 8 yards because Florida State matched up in zone there and their guy blocked the right guy and, you know, it got their guy on the edge. So it's not necessarily a bad call there. That actually wasn't necessarily a bad call. It's not my favorite call. I actually like the opportunity to use your big receivers and put the ball in the end zone there with Francois. But, you know, it's a situation where there are a few places where a little bit of cleaned up execution makes a big difference. There are a number of times where either a guard or the center stepped the wrong direction. And so, you know, when you have a zone that's a design cut back to the left, but everybody's supposed to be stepping right and the center and the guard are double teaming the left defensive tackle instead of stepping right. And they should have double teamed the right defensive tackle, which turned out, you know, really badly in a few cases. You've got to account for that. You can't let that guy have instant penetration there. And that's stuff that can be cleaned up. You know, that's stuff that long-term, you know, that stuff will get cleaned up and it's stuff that can get cleaned up as, you know, as early as next week. You know, that's stuff that between game one and game two, you're able to get fixed with those guys who presumably have made that mistake before in practice. But now again, you get to rep it and correct it one more time and you know, hopefully that doesn't happen anymore. So, you know, that is what it is. That's part of the growing pains of a new staff and, you know, running a different system. Now, as far as some other stuff that I've already been asked about, why didn't Kalon LeBourne play more? I mean, he had one of the few big plays that the team produced in this game. You know, shouldn't he have been on the field taking some carries from Akers or Patrick? And what I'll say to that is, first of all, LeBourne is a real talent, no doubt. But it's not a coincidence that two staffs that are completely unrelated and generally have very different ways of doing things, both staffs determined that the best two running backs on the roster were Cam Akers and Jacquez Patrick. That's not coincidental. Those guys see, both staffs saw those guys every day in practice. And yeah, LeBourne is going to have more of a role going forward, but you know, he's the number three guy for a reason. The other two guys are better and have played better than he has. Now he, you know, obviously you want to get the ball in his hands more, but there's a lot of things you want to do a little bit more and you want to put yourself in position to do those things. And they just didn't in this game. The one thing that I think is perhaps most concerning in this game, aside from just the general sort of sense of flailing that we saw. I mean, this game was every bit as painful to watch from a Florida State perspective as last year's loss to Boston College, and in some ways more so, because this team played hard. That team quit against Boston College. This team never quit on either side of the ball and looked completely helpless at times. And that's actually in many ways worse. But one of the more concerning things, I think, moving forward that I saw is the general approach in the red zone where, you know, if you're playing against a top quality defensive line, a top quality defense, you're going to need to come with some other stuff. You're going to need to either run the quarterback in some cases, which is what, Virginia Tech did with Jackson in a few cases, or preferably You're going to use your size and create some matchups at wide receiver to get what you want at those positions and use some matchup advantage there with your size and all of that in the red zone. And they didn't do that. I'm still completely baffled. I mean, usually, and longtime listeners of this show know that I'm not one generally to second guess play calling very often. If I do it, it's because I was second guessing it before I saw the results of the play. If it's something, you know, what I'm against is guessing on the basis of hindsight. I don't believe in guessing in second guessing a call simply because it didn't work, which is how most people do it. But if I'm sitting there going, what in the world are they doing? Even when they're lining up or, you know, as the play is underway, I'm going that I completely disagree with this. Then I'll question the call. And third and goal from the 9 or 10, and you run a diamond formation with Cam Akers taking the direct snap, and you're running a zone read, power read with Akers, and, you know, I'm sorry. I just don't see it. I mean, even if you execute that play well, which, by the way, that was another situation where they doubled the wrong guy. And as a result, you had a defensive tackle coming free anyway. So Akers probably wouldn't have gotten more than a yard if he'd have gotten back to the line of scrimmage. And, you know, handing it off was the wrong read anyway, which is why Akers was going to pull it. The thing is, what are you expecting to get out of that play? That's where I'm looking at that and going, why get so cute? Why, you know, your best bet based on how things have gone so far in this game is not running the football there. Your best bet is to try to give DeAndre Francois two opportunities to take a crack at the end zone. Because Francois played pretty well in spots. Now, like I said, he struggled in terms of making correct reads and with the speed of his decision making later in the game, and there were a number of times where he didn't let loose when he should have thrown the football. But I think your best bet is to go with, you know, what I was expecting and actually what was discussed on the telecast is, you know, go 3-by-1, force Virginia Tech to declare whether they're going to go 7 across. And if they do that, then you read a spacing or a levels type concept or something like that on the three receiver side. And if they decide to go more of a man concept and match up one-on-one on the backside with the one single receiver side, then you throw a fade or a slant to that side and you rely on your guy to win or draw a pass interference. That's what I was expecting. And I don't quite understand why, when you have those 6'3", 6'4", guys, you don't take advantage there. I mean, Virginia Tech, that's one of the things that they did early, and that's one of the reasons they got that early lead. So, you know, very frustrating to see on offense. I'm going to have a lot more to say once I have a chance to take a look at this a little bit more in depth. I want to spend a little bit more time with that All-22. It's good to have the All-22 of this game immediately after it. But yeah, now on the flip side, I will say this, the defense exceeded my expectations. Harlan Barnett's defense was better than I thought they played better than I thought they would this game. Cause I mean, I knew Virginia Tech would be a challenge in terms of their ability to keep ahead of schedule and keep leverage up. But you know, that Florida State defense played hard. That looked like a Florida State defense again. I mean, still a little limited in terms of personnel. The linebacker position is scary. There were a lot of busts there and some poor run fits, in particular from the linebacker group. And that's going to be probably a consistent problem moving forward all year. But otherwise, I mean, they played hard and they created havoc. They got into the backfield. They got some tackles for a loss. They got Virginia Tech off schedule a reasonable amount of time. And, you know, that goal line stand kept Florida State in the game. The third down defense was excellent, including some good disguise on some hot two type delta package pressures. Some really impressive stuff. And you know, that's a lot to be encouraged by. Be a lot better on defense once they get everybody healthy. I mean, You could see Kando is not nearly 100%. Wilson still not 100%. Samuels didn't play that much. He played in spots and he did not look anywhere close to 100%. You got to have those guys healthy. But overall, the defense was much better than I thought they'd be. Corey Durden was a revelation. He's got some real burst at that defensive tackle. And if that defense continues to play like that, this team has more upside than maybe I expected them to have, because I thought the defense would struggle a little bit more than what we saw tonight. So if they can get the offense back on, you know, get the wheels back on the offense and get back to doing what they anticipated doing and what Taggart's been able to do at other stops, then, you know, the expectations for the season haven't really changed. I mean, I thought coming in that this was kind of a swing game, that, you know, if the Florida State won this game, then they, you know, you could kind of expect 9-3 and maybe 10-2 on the upside if, you know, they stayed really healthy and got some breaks. But, you know, if they didn't win the game, then you'd expect 8-4 and, you know, 9-3 on the upside with, you know, a possibility of 7-5 with some bad injury luck. Well, now, you know, I think the expectation is back is down to that 8-4 area. And you know, you hope that you stay healthy and maybe get a break or two and wind up a little better than that. But, you know, I think now with this game as that opening loss, that's a big deal. But the really sad thing here is that Taggart earned so much margin, you know, doing all the stuff right over the course of the offseason. And, you know, I get the feeling looking at social media and getting texts from different people and all that, that pretty much all the margin that Taggart built up over the offseason is already gone. And, you know, there are already people who are questioning whether or not, you know, Florida State made the right hire by bringing Taggart in. And I will say, I think that kind of talk is just incredibly premature at this point. You're talking about a team that has played one game under a completely new coaching staff in a completely new system on both sides of the ball. There's going to be growing pains. The real question, in terms of whether or not, you know, he's going to wind up having been the right hire or not, is going to be whether or not he's able to get this program back on track from here. Seeing how they are able to recover and whether or not they're able to improve, that's going to be the thing that's going to be the telltale thing. That's going to tell whether or not he winds up being the right coach for the job. And I think there's still hope that he will be. You know, he's been flexible and has learned from mistakes in prior jobs. So, you know, we'll see what he takes away from this and whether or not he's able to get this team not to implode like they did last year after that disappointing opener last year, where that team totally went on the skids. Now they're going to need to rebuild some confidence and really try to get the culture change that they wanted to get. But you know, there's still talent on the roster, and you know, the things that most of the things that they're doing are things that this roster can do well. So again, you know, not entirely pessimistic here, but definitely a very different opener than anyone associated with Florida State could have hoped for. I'll wrap there. Got a little bit more. I'll have plenty more to say once I've had more of a chance to break down that tape. So once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast Hot Takes Edition, brought to you by Lewis Marquez, realtor in Jacksonville, Florida, Garage Makeovers in South Florida, and Resolution Home Loans. All that information's in the show notes. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much, and have a great day if you want to.
I made this.